faith-filled finance. All major UK bank accounts. One app. Provision is built by Christians to help you steward what God's given you. Track your spending, saving and giving in one place. Join the waitlist now at provision.money and get your first month free. That's provision.money.
The Profile. You're listening to Premier Christian Radio.
Well, hello and a very good afternoon to you. You're listening to Premier Christian Radio. It's just gone 4 o'clock on this Saturday afternoon, which means it's time for The Profile. This is the show where we delve into a person's life, faith and testimony. I'm really pleased to say we've got a special edition of the show today because we're digging back into the archives to 2016 to air an interview that John Pantry did with Keith Getty. Keith Getty, of course, is known the world over for his modern hymns, most notably, of course, In Christ Alone, that he co-wrote with Stuart Townend. And in this interview, John Pantry sat down with Keith Getty to find out more about his story. But before we get to it, just a reminder that this show is brought to you in association with Premier Christianity Magazine, the UK's leading Christian magazine. If you'd like a free sample copy of our very latest issue, we'd love to send you one. Just visit premierchristianity.com/free sample. Time now for the interview. Let's listen in.
Hello, I'm John Pantry. When I heard that songwriter and musician Keith Getty was to be in London, I was determined to persuade him to pop into the Premier Studios to find out what was going on in his busy life. The request succeeded, but before we hear that interview, let's listen to the song that took his songwriting skills to a worldwide audience.
Keith learned to play classical guitar and later flute, studying music at Durham University. Apart from performing in many events, he began working as an orchestrator and was soon writing for projects as diverse as Michael W. Smith's album Healing Rain, music from the Lord of the Rings trilogy, work for Sir Cliff and the Prague Symphony Orchestra. He and his wife, Kristin, developed a passion for writing modern hymns, often rooted in a distinctive Celtic style and sometimes in collaboration with songwriter Stuart Townend. Their song, In Christ Alone, has been sung around the world and recorded by many different artists, and there have been countless new songs since. He and Kristin split their time between Nashville and Port Stewart in Northern Ireland these days, and Keith joins me in the studio today.
Hey, John.
Nice to see you once again. Let's go right back, if we may. What was it like growing up in Northern Ireland during the Troubles? How aware were you of what was going on?
Well, when you grow up anywhere, whether it's Jerusalem or Ireland or Beirut or wherever, or London or wherever it is, you don't really think about it that much. It's only in recent years that I've both realized that did create quite a negative culture. That I and everybody else has to learn to deal with and adjust. But I think more than that, I'm thankful for the upbringing I had. You know, you spend many years thinking you're the poor relations. And yet at the same time, Steve Jobs talks about creativity as the combination of our experiences. And I was brought up in a conservative Christian home where we didn't listen to pop music, so it had to be church music. We had to listen to congregational music, Bill Gaither, traditional hymns, whatever it was. It was songs of fellowship, mission praise. It was congregational music. And then I studied classical music, and I was Irish, and I was a Presbyterian theological nerd. And so the combination of those things, when you put them in the juicer and press go, outcomes the hymns that we write today. Right. So I look back on it now with a tremendous thanksgiving. That island has given so many missionaries to the world and has birthed so many melodies. And so I am a product of my home and I'm thankful for it.
Did the Troubles ever affect your family directly in any way?
No, Kristen's family had a shop in Armagh, and she had an uncle who was injured once. But for the most part, we were thankfully, it didn't really affect.
You're the eldest of four children. A very musical family. Did your parents play music in the house all the time?
Yeah. Dad was a church organist and Mum was a piano teacher. So music was very much, it was what brought them together, and it was kind of the central language of life, really. And so I originally I wanted to be Ian Botham, but I realized that I really wasn't that good at cricket. And as he might not be the best Christian mentor either. And so but then at the age of 10, as you said, I got into the classical guitar. And I got into the guitar. My grandfather, who was very traditional, was very unhappy about this, which only added to my intensity of wanting to learn the guitar. So that got me into it. And once I did that, I never looked back again. So.
And were your parents pushy parents, as we described? Did they really insist you learn?
I've tried to think about this. Because people have always said to me, you know, because you quite a lot of energy to do stuff in life. Quite often, you know, your parents were really going after them. They were very enthusiastic about it. I mean, we're doing three nights at the waterfront in a few weeks' time. And then we're flying over the first flight in the next morning to do the big sing in Albert Hall. Then we're flying back the next day to do two nights with Songs of Praise. They're doing 15 songs in the catalogue for next year, which is really exciting. And of course, Mum and Dad will be at all six. You know, they'll turn up. So there was that kind of enthusiasm. When we started the New Irish Arts, they were very into it, but I wouldn't call them pushy. My brothers and sisters aren't particularly wired similarly, and so they just did their own thing.
And music came naturally to you. Did you have to slog away at it, or did it come? Were you an enthusiastic learner?
I'm not sure. Obviously, there was a degree of naturalness to it, but I mean, I'm a songwriter today, and you know, we've had the songs have had good success, and they're well accepted. But I was working this out when we finished the Facing a Task project, because that was really a lot of my outside of the Christmas music I write. That was a lot of my best music for 4 years, and I came to the conclusion that when I take all the tunes I write on my iPhone, all the tunes I record on the laptop, and all the tunes I write down in manuscripts, the ones that I'm really proud of, 1 out of 120 becomes a song. So I am somebody who's very passionate about music, but I do have to work hard to get results. And I think as I get older, I think you have to even graft harder and search more. You know, In Christ Alone was something that was bursting to go. Those sort of melodies and the vision behind that and the collaboration with Stuart, that was very natural. We feel we've had our best writing year together in 7 this year, but we've had to work very hard.
You started off doing a lot of orchestration as well. That strikes me as a very complex business, because you've got to know the ranges of all the instruments, the limitations of instruments. There's a huge amount of copying to do. I don't know whether you got involved
in all
of that.
I played the flute in an orchestra, but I always wanted to be the conductor, which may tell you more than you need to know about my personality. But I wanted to conduct, and then I found my opportunities came by being a derringer. So being the arranger and the orchestrator got me into that. And so that was a great experience. But you know, I don't do them now, although they were actually very important. It only dawned on me in the last couple of years that all those years of practicing the flute, I would get up at 6 in the morning quite often and practice the flute for 2 hours. Okay. And so I'd do like 30 minutes embouchure, then I would do 30 minute scales and arpeggios, then I would break down the second hour into trying to play perfect melodies. James Galway, who I did some work with, always said, just try and play Irish. He said, Irish melodies and hymn melodies are the most perfect melodies in the world to learn how to shape a melody. And so all that, and also then becoming an orchestrator where I was the guy who basically helped shape somebody else's song. I look back at it now and go, that probably fed a lot into my approach to melody writing, because I write melodies that you would play on a flute, or I write melodies that would orchestrate, you know. It's interesting kind of looking back now.
Well, tell me a little bit about working with James Galway. I had an uncle who was a violinist and absolutely idolised James Galway.
You know, I have to confess, I didn't do much. I was at his flute master class in Switzerland, and he really inspired me, but he told me he felt I was a better arranger than I was flute player, which was kind of discouraging, but was helpful, because it made me realise It helped me refocus my strengths. And then he gave me some encouragement when I first started rearranging. So not a lot, but a guy with a wonderful vision for melody that, as I said, looking back now, has probably focused where we've gone.
And when did that creative urge to write songs themselves rather than just parts for orchestras, et cetera, I mean, emerge? Was that always with you?
I'm either very stupid or just a really slow learner, because I came up with songwriting kind of almost completely backwards. You know, I came at it as a player who became a conductor, who became a composer arranger, who became an arranger of songs, who became a songwriter. So I actually went about the entire process backwards, and to realize that I actually was really mediocre at all the things. I just wish somebody would have sat down and went, you know, you're really mediocre at these things, but they didn't. So that was the process. But I guess that's also the process that gave us, perhaps, if we have a unique voice, when you hear one of my tunes, you always know it's my tune. So I guess if that is a unique voice, it's probably because of that process. Mm. That I went through.
How does it work when you're working with someone like Stuart Tanner? Because you clearly have some very strong musical ideas. You know, that's all burned in your brain. I know Stuart studied music as well, but you know, sometimes the two things can clash, can't they?
No, Stuart and I, we've always credited the songs jointly, and not separated the credits, because he is such a fine musician. He determines a lot of what the musical is about. And although I'm the music writer, he influences it. And although he is the lyric writer, a lot of the times I've had, I want a song about this. This is how I imagine this song to be about. And mm-hmm. I don't have any of his talent, but because of that, we sort of joint credit. But it's basically my music and his lyrics. And he is a hard taskmaster.
Is he?
But a very loyal taskmaster, you know. So he would. I remember one year my wife and I got to live in the Swiss Alps. The first year we got married, so we got a year away, and it was wonderful. And one of our friends from church said, "We're going down to the south of Italy for a holiday. Do you want to come?" And I went, "No, I'm going to see Stuart the following Friday, and I got to spend the whole week just purely focused on writing tunes and writing melodies, because I want him to have a new song. I want us to have a new song." So I missed the entire holiday to Italy, and I flew in the Friday morning. Flew, you know, Geneva Gatwick, went to see him and played him all the tunes, and he just went, "Yeah, none of these are really special." And I had to go home, having missed a whole holiday and having nothing new.
No.
But he made me have higher standards, you know, right. And I think anybody in life who brings us to a higher standard, you know, they're helpful people to find, you know. Mm. Because they don't let you make your own same mistakes.
How did you first meet Stuart? Did you just hear about him?
I was in church service. I still remember where I was sitting and where I was, because I was getting very frustrated with modern worship music, and I was still remember where I was sitting when I heard this song called "How Deep the Father's Love," and I went, "That's what I want to do." And so I kindly, Stephen and John at Kingsway Docherty and Pack at Kingsway introduced us, and so. We didn't necessarily click, I don't think. And he said, "Okay, well, send me one of your tunes and any ideas you have for the song. And if anything comes to me, I'll do it." So I sent him his tune and the idea of a hymn that goes through the life of Christ and what that means. And so he came up with "In Christ Alone." That was our first song. So we should have quit after that, actually, because it's been totally downhill since.
I don't know. You may well better it. Now, very often songwriters don't always recognise their various tune. When you'd completed that, did you think, "This is a world beater"? Because it really has been a sensationally successful song.
No, I didn't know. I didn't know. I actually sent him, the truth is, I sent him two melodies, and the other one has been a complete flop of a song, and I couldn't tell the difference.
Right.
Yeah. So the other one was called "John All the Glorious Names," and it was a disaster. It tanked.
Any idea how many people have actually recorded that song? Because it's been much recorded.
Oh, it's in the hundreds for sure.
Is it really?
Yeah. Fantastic. Jonathan Brown at Kingsway. They recently were doing a lot of work in the Far East, especially with China, but also South Korean people as they got. And they reckon CCLI claimed that over 50 million people in the world sing it each year. And
50 million.
But Jonathan reckon with the feedback they're getting from Asia, from India, China, Korea, those kind of countries, that the numbers actually could be beyond 100 million. So I don't know. But I mean, That was our first song. I've been trying to do something as good as that for 15 years since, and sensationally failing. So that was just a unique space and time.
And you've quite a catalogue of songs since. I mean, you've written some stuff on your own as well, haven't you? And you've collaborated with others as well. Yeah. And a number of albums have come out.
Yeah. I think every year, I find it gets harder. And I reckon by about 2005, I'd run out of ideas. And then I just married Kristen, and she came up with a lot of freshness, and she refreshed me. And then by 2010, I would say we were struggling because we wanted children. And so she was writing a little less. And I think also just as the company grew in the States and the pressure of managing people, And then we had this opportunity. Billy Graham asked us to do some music for a Christmas event, and that of course became our Christmas show, which plays on PBS. It's the only Christian show on PBS, Christmas show, and it's the only Christian show in the Carnegie Christmas season and in the Kennedy Center Christmas season. So that was a refreshing thing. And then last year, this missional opportunity with Facing a Task Unfinished, I think that busted doors open for us again. We also started to work with some contemporary artists and started to even think about some global music. And I think for about the last 12 months, we finally began to do better again. So it's been a long journey of keeping trying, you know. And
there's been a great album. It was called the Irish Christmas Album as well. Joy, was it called?
Yeah. And then it came out again. That's the one that's a TV show.
TV show. Okay.
Yeah. So, right. And that all started with doing a few songs for this beautiful evening in Carolina that Dr. Billy Graham spoke at, which is great. So.
And we'll hear more from my interview with Keith Getty in a couple of minutes. Stay with us. You're listening to Premier Christian Radio.
Premier Christianity Magazine. In this month's issue.
He's the pastor famous for marrying Kanye West and Kim Kardashian. We talked to the megachurch preacher, Rich Wilkerson Jr. Jesus told us to love our neighbours, but do we even know who they are? Read our shocking report. Plus, discover how Catholics are questioning the Pope's views on doctrine, and why are so many young men following Jordan B. Peterson?
For your free copy, visit premierchristianity.com/freesample. The Profile. You're listening to Premier Christian Radio.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Premier Christian Radio. I'm Sam Hales. This afternoon on the show, we've got Keith Getty talking to my colleague John Pantry. It's a fantastic interview. Do hope you're enjoying it. We're going to pick it up in a moment's time. Just before we do, I wanted to let you know that you can, of course, hear John Pantry right here on Premier Christian Radio every weekday morning for the Inspirational Breakfast Show. That's John Pantry and Rosie Wright. Every weekday morning from 7 a.m. It's a great way to start your day. Listen to Premier Christian Radio, the Inspirational Breakfast Show. But now, time to hear the rest of that interview that John Pantry conducted with the singer-songwriter, worship leader, hymn writer, Keith Getty. Let's listen in.
I went on to ask Keith about the albums of theirs that had won awards. How much did it matter?
I don't really care.
Really?
No.
really?
No, I care about the songs. I mean, I would tell you, if the songs were being sung less, that would bother me. Because or if the songs weren't being received well, that would bother me. So it's not any lack of drive or pride, even pride, unfortunately. But I'm very focused at my job in life is to write songs for the global church. We live in the most thrilling moment in history to be alive. There are more Christians in the world today. The Bible is in more languages than at any point in history. 4.5 continents of the world, Christianity is growing. And on the 1.5 continents that we live in, where Christianity is not growing, there are still believers in every city. But there is also a need in those 1.5 continents for deep songs. I think the church needs at this point deep songs that engage the global church and help build Christians. If we are going to survive the challenges, both of aggressive militant atheism on one side and world religion on the other, we cannot expect our children, my three little daughters that I left this morning very early, and their children, we cannot expect them to survive, never mind thrive, never mind find the next Harvard and free the slaves like Wilberforce and write the next Brandenburg Concerto like Bach, unless we have deep believers. Deep believers, not just out of intellect, out of some dull orthodoxy, but deep believers who are also passionate, who are also creative and artistic, and inspired to express this unique, unique good news that is out of Jesus.
On a different note altogether, you and Christian have two girls now.
Three.
We can't stop.
I'm out of touch. We can't stop. It's unbelievable.
Three girls. How do you cope as a family with living in between Nashville and Port Stewart?
Well, it's not really between. We're essentially students that never grew up. So we live in the south side of the city in Nashville. Built a house there, and so we live there from September through to June, almost like you were a student. Right. And then we go home for the summer to the little house by the beach in Port Stewart.
And I suppose it's like many kids, as long as they're with their parents, they feel they're home.
Yeah, they're doing good so far. We take it a step at a time. We have no fancy answers. It's like you take the next chapter and go, so what does it mean to write hymns and be stewards of them? So 10 years ago, that meant we spent 36 weeks or weekends a year traveling to introduce the songs. 15 years ago, it meant just writing. And then 5 years ago, it meant taking a break to have children. Then for the last 5 years, picking up from the kids, it's meant doing 12 weeks a year. And so we're probably moving to a new phase soon. Eliza's being homeschooled at the minute, but I don't think that's a long-term solution. So I think we'll probably go to about 40 events a year in the next 2 years, which will be 12 weekends, plus a little extended Christmas run.
And you're writing children's songs now as well.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of. My children's music hero, I have two children's creative heroes. One is C.S. Lewis and one is Cecil Francis Alexander. And Cecil Francis Alexander, of course, was a bishop in Derry, which is my home county now. And she wrote, to try and teach eight-year-olds to understand theology, she wrote, set the Apostles' Creed to music. And so we believe in one God, maker of heaven and earth. She wrote a little song called All Things Bright and Beautiful, right. All Creatures Great and Small.
Okay.
You may have heard of it. Once in Royal David City.
At every wedding I take.
Once in Royal David City was her one, became incarnate, born of a virgin. Right. And there is a green hill far away was the one about the atonement. But it's interesting that she was so concerned about the lack of theology in what eight-year-olds sang. And yet those songs in their original versions now would be disqualified for most churches on the basis that there's too many words for adults. Now, that tells us a very shocking thing about the depth of believers. And so I interpret that with the kids. I want the kids to sing hymns, both, I guess, one of them to sing some of our hymns that our kids have learned. And also we want them to sing classic hymns to bring with them because obviously these albums, they're hip and they're fun and there's Kayleys and there's lots of actions and shouting and it's a good time. And kids are really hard to impress. Do you know what I mean? So when you're trying to get our kids interested in, like, we were playing them songs and we could tell in the back seat of the car, they were bored. And there was even one that I loved and I played it to them and they went, "Turn that off, Dad." You know, so we're doing 12 a year, and we're going to basically teach our kids them one a month. Right. And if nobody else is interested, that's fine. But but that's kind of the basis we're starting with.
I went on to ask Keith about his work with the charity Compassion.
We've always been involved from literally the first day Kristen and I met each other. We worked together for 3 years before she realized that I was actually attractive. But we've worked with kids' mission work, so we were involved with African children's and fields of life. It's always been a part of our lives. Compassion are our partners in America. Stand By Me is a small group that came out of our home church, which Kristen's dad started. So they help us with our British concerts, but we always try to incorporate those organizations wherever we go.
Brilliant. How long did it take you to realize that she was attractive?
About half a second.
Finally, what are your plans in the years to come? You've talked a little about, you know, what you hope to be doing, but where do you see yourself in 5 or 10 years' time? Could you ever see yourself leading a church, for example?
Well, every day we have on earth is given by the King. So, you know, we'd be thankful for the breath in our bodies today to get to walk around London and see your beautiful city. And that's you know, we don't presume in tomorrow. But part of, I guess, stewardship is making plans. I've felt for the last 10 years there is such a need to build a catalogue of hymns for the global church and to be a steward of that and to encourage a new generation of people to do that. That more than I don't have a tenth of the hours in a day I want to do that. And yet with little daughters, I can't afford to work outside of 9 to 5. This day in London is a I get one day a year at this because we've 3 daughters to raise. So, so I think, you know, I guess in 5 years' time, I'd love to be a better husband, and I love my 3 daughters to know the Lord. And after that, if I can keep writing songs that aren't terrible, that would be good. And sure, we've always lived walking distance from our church, and because that was how Kristen grew up. And we've been fortunate that when we lived in Ohio, then Nashville, during these 10 years in America, our best friends in both churches have been the pastor and his wife. So that's very much part of life. And our offices are in the same building as our church, so we feel very much attached to that. My 5 closest friends at school all became pastors.
Really?
Except for 2, me and one other guy. And so I do think about it a lot. You know, should I be a pastor? But every time I go ask somebody, they always go, no, you'd be a terrible pastor. You've no skills for that. You'd have no talent at that, and you'd upset everybody. So I don't know. Either way, I'll be trying to serve the church for the rest of my life with hopefully with every breath I get. So
well, I along with many other people hope you keep on writing and producing songs like In Christ Alone and many, many others.
Well, thanks, John.
Bless you, Keith. Thanks much for talking to us today.
Thank you.
You're listening to Premier Christian Radio. I'm Sam Hales, and that was my colleague John Pantry interviewing Keith Getty. I do hope you enjoyed that. If you want to hear more interviews just like that with well-known Christians from all walks of life, why not check out the Profile podcast? Just go to premierchristianradio.com/theprofile. You'll be able to access past shows, past interviews the team here at Premier have done with some wonderful people. And every week we're bringing you a brand new interview, not just here on Premier Christian Radio, but also on that podcast. It's the Profile podcast. You can get it wherever you download your podcast from, or just go to premierchristianradio.com/theprofile. Just before we leave you, time to let you know that this show is brought to you in association with the UK's leading Christian magazine, Premier Christianity Magazine. For your free sample copy of the latest issue, just go to premierchristianity.com. But that's all we've got time for here on The Profile. We'll see you next week.